Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Mario Williams hands him around the waist and he drops him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo! Come on, baby!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. We're going to talk about the schedule again one night after the schedule was released. We'll take your comments and questions on that. Also, 7:30, the Bills' new pro scout, Gerald Dixon, will join us in studio. At 8 o'clock, Ethan Albright, the former Bills' long snapper, who is now a color analyst on the North Carolina football broadcast, will talk to him about Eric Ebron, the tight end. And Steve Calhoun, a quarterback guru who's worked with E.J. Manuel, joins us at 8:30.
This place is pandemonium.
Finds a crease up the middle, dodges a man at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A little bit of draft coverage tonight, a little bit of schedule talk, a little bit of pro scouting talk. Got it all. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO for a Thursday night. Thanks for tuning in here until 9 o'clock tonight. Like what we have lined up, we want to hear from you as well. The schedule is out 23 and a half hours ago. And we got to it a little bit with the phones last night, but we'd like to do it again tonight. Some people think the Bills were wronged in the schedule this year in terms of, well, some people were upset about that false report earlier on a couple of weeks ago about a Thursday night game, a Thanksgiving game at Detroit. That did not happen. Some people were misled by a report out of Wisconsin about a Monday night game here against Green Bay. That did not happen. I think maybe the lesson learned here is that the schedule's not set till the schedule is set. There's a really good story. Peter King at his Monday Morning Quarterback website, MMQB, spent a couple of hours with the schedule makers in New York. I would highly advise you check that out, and you'll get a sense of how complex the NFL schedule is and the different factors that go into it, and really why the reports that come out a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago are meaningless. I mean, it kind of goes down to the wire. I think Peter King's article said that the schedule wasn't set until Tuesday night, and they released it Wednesday night. And they're constantly kind of refining and reassessing and putting in new calculations into the computer. I mean, millions of possible combinations that boil it down to one. At any rate, let's talk about the schedule if you wish. The phone line's open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The Bills have a new pro scout, Gerald Dixon, hired today. The announcement came today anyway, and he'll be in studio with us at 7:30. A pro scout. He's not really involved in the draft coming up in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from today. He's a pro scout, and we'll talk to him about his duties, which include advanced scouting for Bills opponents. Also tonight, Ethan Albright. Does that name ring a bell? It should if you're a Bills fan, because back from 1996 through 2000, Ethan Albright did a tremendous job as the Bills' long snapper. He had a great connection with Steve Christie and Chris Moore back then. Remember him? Big guy, red-haired guy. He's a North Carolina Tar Heel, and this past year he was the color analyst on the North Carolina football radio broadcast. So who better to talk about Eric Ebron, the tight end from Carolina? The Bills have been linked to Eric Ebron a lot in recent mock drafts, and it's a pick that seems to make some measure of sense. We'll talk with Ethan Albright at 8 o'clock about that. He'll join us on the line at 8 o'clock. And at 8:30, we're going to be on the line all the way out to the West Coast to a gentleman named Steve Calhoun, who played some professional football, not in the NFL. But he's one of these quarterback coaches, one of these quarterback gurus. He has the Armed and Dangerous Football Camp out on the West Coast, and he has spent significant time with E.J. Manuel over the last few years working on quarterback mechanics. In fact, E.J. cited him just the other day, a couple of days ago, when he talked about how he spent his offseason. E.J. Manuel cited Steve Calhoun as working on some of his mechanics. We're going to talk to Steve Calhoun about that at 8:30. As we said, the lines are open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550. 550, 2550. And one of the things we should talk about, besides the schedule, the other thing to talk about, the league is still talking about playoff expansion. In fact, Commissioner Roger Goodell said that a vote is uncertain on a proposal to add two teams to the postseason. But the owners are going to meet in May, and it could happen in May. He said a 14-team playoff could be implemented for the upcoming season or for 2015. If they don't vote this May, then 2015 would be the target. You know the plan, right? They're going to talk about it in May at the owners' meetings. Expansion of the playoffs by one team in each conference. So it would be a 14-team playoff. They would give the number one seed in each conference a bye week. And then they'd have three games, three wild card playoff games in the first weekend of the playoffs. That'd boil it down to three winners. Then you add the bye team. You have four teams, and you go into the division round next, just as you do now. So there'd only be one bye. It's a way to, again, this is what they do, generate more television revenue. What do you think about playoff expansion? Give us your thoughts on that on the phones at 803-0550. Is that dilute the playoff field? I mean, what if the Buffalo Bills finally snap their playoff drought and they do it when playoffs have expanded to 14 teams? I mean, come on, really? That would take the air out of the bubble for a lot of people. Let's hope it doesn't come down to that. Let's hope they make it without expansion of the playoffs. But it's on the table and going to be on the table next month, in a couple of weeks, actually, when the owners meet. Expansion of the playoffs to 14 teams. What do you think about that? Seven teams per conference. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Still on the table as well, and we thought this one was kind of put on the shelf after the owners' meeting in March, but still on the table. They're going to experiment with snapping the ball from the 15-yard line on extra points in the first 2 weeks of preseason to make them more challenging. So it'd be about a 33-yard kick. Right now, it's what, about a 20-yard kick. So they're going to move it back to about a 33-yard extra point kick. They've been discussing it for a while, including at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago. How do you feel about that, a 33-yard kick for an extra point? Give us a call on that. Either that playoff expansion, longer extra points, or the bill schedule. Phone lines open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Now, last night, this came up on the schedule discussion about the times last season when the Bills faced opponents coming off extra rest, which include a bye week or a game after a Thursday night game, which amounts to 10 days of rest. Last season, the Bills had six of their games against teams with extra rest. It was a point of contention for some in the Bills organization, and three of those games came against division opponents. This year, only two, both of them the Jets games. In Week 8, the Bills play in MetLife Stadium in New York. The Jets will be coming off 10 days of rest. They'll play New England the Thursday night the week before. And when the Bills and the Jets meet again in Week 12, the Jets will be coming off their bye week. The Bills will be coming off their Thursday night game, so they'll have 10 days. The Jets will have 2 weeks. So it is a bit of a change this year. They no longer, I mean, last year, six games against teams coming off extra rest. That's down to just two games this year, both against the Jets, and again, mitigated by the fact that one of those games, the Bills come off their Thursday night game. We could talk about that if you'd like as well. Conspiracy theorists believe that last year the league gave the Bills short shrift when it came to playing opponents off the off their extra rest. It's a factor. I won't dispute that. But I don't think there's a conspiracy. My view is the league, with all, and again, you got to read Peter King when you see all the calculations that go into it. Somebody is going to face that kind of a schedule. Maybe not quite as much as the Bills faced last year, but somebody's going to have issues like that. Read Peter King's schedule, read Peter King's article, and you'll see there are a couple of teams, I believe Seattle in particular, that have wild west to east coast swings like 3 weeks in a row. All right, phone lines open. We'll talk about the Bills, the NFL, the draft, the schedule out yesterday, extra points back to a 33-yard kick, experimentation in preseason this year, or expansion of the playoffs. Anything you want. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Start the calls with Brian and Clarence. Hello, Brian. You're on the air. How are you?
Hey, Murph. Good. How you doing?
Good.
Just heading home from work, and I gotta be honest with you. I haven't looked at the schedule yet, and that may sound crazy, but it sort of is the point of my call. Is that, you know, the way the league's going, and I don't begrudge them. It's a money game, and it's ratings and so forth. Whether it's your show or TV, I'll go home tonight at some point. There'll probably be an hour show about the schedule, or ESPN or NFL Network. I'm just wondering, like, from your perspective, you know, way back when the draft wasn't even televised, and now the pro day is, and the combine is, and I'm just wondering, like, where you see, you know, I'm not talking about expanding the playoffs, but what other sources of revenue or ideas do you think the NFL's thinking about? I mean, as crazy as it sounds, do you think it could ever, they would ever televise a scrimmage in training camp or something, you know, around, you know, something like that? Just looking, you know, for your ideas or thoughts on what might be next.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound that crazy. I mean, years ago, the Dallas Cowboys, they probably still do, had a daily training camp show. I mean, we're at training camp every day doing radio. In fact, when the Bills had their nighttime practices each of the last 2 years, we broadcast the nighttime practices sort of like a game broadcast. So that's already here. Where does it go in the future? I don't know. I mean, what I think it's a lot of it is a lot of it's going to be, you know, how the product is delivered to people, whether it's over-the-air television, broadcast television, or cable television, or satellite dish, or through the internet. I think that's probably, you know, the next frontier for the NFL. Or, by the way, on your phone, on your personal devices, delivering content there. They're right there right now doing it, and I think they're trying to find ways to monetize it and make more money on it. I think this is a cuts both ways. The genius of the NFL is finding ways to squeeze more money out of the sports product. And there are other sports. I'm aware of that. There are other sports that people are interested, but no one has been able to monetize and market the product the way the NFL has. And it has exploded over the last 20 years or so. It is quite different than when I first got started in this. You're right about the draft. I mean, the draft is now a major primetime television show 2 weeks from tonight, 8 o'clock. The NFL draft will be televised both on ESPN and on the NFL Network, and whatever else sports wise is on TV that day, that night, whether it's Major League Baseball, NBA playoffs, I mean, hockey, the ratings for the NFL draft will dwarf the ratings for those other sports. That says something. It'll be the most popular sports event on television in the month of May by far. I am surprised, and I've been at it for a long time. I kind of shake my head from time to time about how far it's come. I never envisioned that the league would become this popular. Never envisioned that we would have a two-hour nightly talk show on the radio about the Buffalo Bills. But it's not just here. It's all over the league. Networks, entire television and radio networks devoted to the NFL. Teams, you know, I mean, the Washington Redskins own their own radio station in Washington. It's huge, and the end is nowhere in sight, as far as I can tell. And this kind of goes, you don't want to talk about playoff expansion, but the expansion of the playoffs, one more team in each conference, to me, is sort of a very smart way to generate more revenue. Those playoff games get huge ratings, boxcar TV ratings, huge TV ratings in the month of January. Now they've got two more games to sell. Two more games to market. That'll be huge. Thursday night football coming up this year on CBS, first half of the season. It's going to be huge. I mean, does anybody doubt that the Thursday night football on CBS is going to be the number one TV show on Thursday night this fall? I'll bet you $100 it will be. And that means that next year there'll be like a multi-year Thursday night football package for sale to some network, maybe CBS again, after everybody sees what the ratings are. And Thursday night will be institutionalized, or the NFL will be institutionalized on Thursdays, just as it is on Mondays and Sunday nights now. So where's the end? I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't see it in sight. Let's go to Ron in Amherst. Hi, Ron. Welcome. You're on the air.
John, I had a question about the extra point test that's going to be done this preseason. Under the current rule, if the defense commits a penalty during the extra point, it's tacked on to the kickoff, the upcoming kickoff. And under the new rule, how will that work with the kickoff, the extra point being kicked at the 15-yard line?
That's a really good question. I have not seen that. I would anticipate it would be the same. I'm not thinking, again, I have not seen the exact rule proposal. I'm just reading over this. I would anticipate it would be the same. I can't imagine they would move it up 5 yards for a shorter kick. Do you? Maybe they would. I don't know. Let me look into that. That's a very good question, Ron. Whether it's a shorter kick after a 5 yard penalty or whether the 5 yard goes to the kickoff. Again, it's just in the proposal stage, and it's just a 2 week preseason experiment at this stage. Anyway, it's not an actual rule, but. Yeah, that takes some looking into. Let me do that. Thanks for your call. Lines are open. Your thoughts on anything. The Bills, their schedule, the NFL in general. the rule proposal on extra points, moving it into a 33-yard kick as opposed to a 20-yard kick now. That's the plan for the first 2 weeks of preseason. Not formally approved yet. The expansion of the playoffs. I think that's a big deal, expansion of the playoffs, if that happens. It could happen this year. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. And you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Ryan Perna tweets in, we need Buffalo to make the playoffs before an expansion so there isn't an asterisk next to our long-awaited playoff berth. There would be, wouldn't there? I mean, in some quarters, people would say, well, they only made the playoffs because there's one extra game. That would be tough. That would be kind of tough to watch. Charlie Oswald tweets in, we finally have 8 home games. Let's win those so we can play in the primetime games in January and February. Okay. I'd sign out for that. Let's see. Matthew tweets in, organization should be very upset they changed the rules just so Bills Dolphins wouldn't be on Thanksgiving. Well, that's not why they did it. You're talking about what they call them the cross-flex games, the games that go from CBS to Fox. So it wasn't because they had that in mind. And, again, I first heard of that yesterday, but the league apparently had that in mind. That's why it didn't have to be the Bills or the Dolphins playing in the Thanksgiving game. However, they didn't do that to prevent the Bills and the Dolphins playing in Detroit on Thanksgiving. That's the way it worked out. They did it to equalize, and this is my understanding after reading a lot about it last night and today, they did it to equalize the network television product so that there wouldn't be a week with, say, there's a Fox or a CBS doubleheader week, and Fox just has kind of a light schedule of games, and they can't compete ratings-wise against CBS. So now they make that into a Fox game and give them the Buffalo market, which will be a boost to the local affiliate and help Fox's network ratings. It's just an attempt to equalize, to sort of smooth out the differences week to week between the Fox package and the CBS package. And again, I think moving forward, it's the first step towards perhaps in the next television contract, the AFC is not automatically the CBS conference, and the NFC is not automatically the Fox conference. I mean, somebody, I think, at the league level has figured out a way to maybe spread out all the games over all of these network platforms and what do you know, make more money at it. We'll see. Lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Greg in Tonawanda. Hello, Greg. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yay. First, congratulations for getting the guests. You've obviously had some integrity in your career. You get good guys, and that's a real tribute to you. So thanks for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I get a lot of help from our producer, Jay Harris, too. Well, once in a while.
Done a great job,
twisting
too.
His arm.
Congratulations, Jay. The comment I wanted to make is about the extra point. And I had spent some time overseas and watching a lot of rugby. And one of the things they do in rugby with the extra point is the point at which you, when that can rugby, putting the ball on the ground, is the point you line up directly back from that point and you kick your extra point from that. So what that means is if you score, like, in the corner, like right over the flag, you know, there's a minimum distance, like 5 yards from the sideline, but now you got to kick your extra point from that angle. And that would sort of make it a bit more interesting. And now teams could have the option to move the ball back. But you see in rugby, sometimes people are kicking extra points from 40 yards because they scored in the corner and they had to take the ball to try to get a decent angle to kick that extra point. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
So it's the point where the team enters the end zone. That's you snap the ball from where?
Yeah, so, for example, if you scored, like, right in the corner, right, you caught the corner, well, then what happened is the ball would move along the sideline. Now, in rugby, there's a minimum, so you'd maybe move it 5 yards towards the center, but you're almost kicking from the sideline.
Yeah, how many yards out, though?
Well, you would get the choice, but you can put it on the 2-yard line where it is now, or 3-yard line, and, you know, you would kick from there. So now you're kicking at a sharp angle. So in rugby, you have the choice. You can actually move the ball back from the 3, you know, maybe to the 20-yard line, because by moving along, but still you're by the sideline for that.
Yeah.
Whereas what you see in rugby is guys will try to score, and they'll try to score in the middle of the field. So this way they have a straight-on extra point.
Right.
So wherever the point is you cross the goal line, you just sort of draw a straight line, put the ball on the 3 at that point. So you may be kicking, like, literally 5 yards from the sideline, trying to make that extra point at that tough angle, and that would add a bit more drama to that extra point.
Got it. Interesting. Let me ask you this, though, Greg. And you said in rugby teams will try to score towards the middle of the goal line.
Yes.
Do we want that in football? I mean, don't you want to use the entire end zone to score touchdowns? I mean,
Yes, but Yeah, but the thing is, you got to sort of weigh it. It's like, geez, the choice is to try to, you know, score at all and take risk on the extra point, or, you know, do I fall down near the corner and then try to score again, this time from the middle of the field? You'd probably want to take the six, wherever you can get that six, and then worry about the extra point afterwards.
Yeah,
now, the thing about rugby that's a little different, it's not where you cross the goal line. You actually have to push the ball into the ground.
Okay.
So literally you can be in the end zone, and if a guy tackles you and puts you and lands on his back and you're up on the ground, your touchdown doesn't count, and the ball gets moved back again. So whereas in the NFL, I think, you know, it's where the ball crosses the plane,
right,
where the receiver catches the ball in the end zone,
right,
and just comes straight back from that point. That might make it at least a bit more drama to it anyway.
Yeah, you're right. That's an interesting proposal, Greg. I got to think about that. It's I think it would make it a lot more dramatic. It would mean the kicks would be a lot less automatic, and the decision mm-hmm. the teams would have to make both before mm-hmm. they call a play and in the course of the play is it worth, you know, what's that 1 point worth? Is that one yep. point for the extra point worth, you know, taking this play into the corner here, to the corner of the end zone, a flag pattern? Or do we need that 1 point so we better score somewhere, you know, towards the middle of the field? I mean, again, you know what I mean? It would be a calculation you'd have to make before you call a play and right. maybe during the quarter. I mean, think of a quarterback going through his reads.
Yeah.
What are you going to yeah. do? Oh, that guy's open in yeah. the corner, but that might screw up our extra point. So now I better throw it down the middle to the tight end. Can you imagine right. a quarterback trying to make that kind of a read?
Right. And imagine the 15-yard line proposal. Like, what do you do about two-point conversions? Do you say, okay, we're calling a two-point conversion, so we're now going to move up to the three or try to score? Well, no one will do two-point conversions unless you absolutely have to if it's kicked from the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
So this still leaves that two-point conversion. If you score in the corner, maybe you say, you know, the odds are we should try a two-pointer.
Yeah.
We'll have a better chance, and then you'll get more two-point conversions, and that may make things more interesting, yeah. too.
That's a very good point. I like all of that, Greg. Thanks. I never knew that, and I never thought of that. I like all of those ideas, and that if as long as we're going to experiment with the extra point kick, why not try something like that? Someone else had a proposal during, and this went back to early in the spring, late in the winter, about when you score a touchdown, you can only make like two substitutions, you know, long snapper, say, and kicker for the extra point. Everybody else who's on the field for the touchdown has to stay on the field for the extra point. And I've been thinking a lot about that. What would that accomplish? It wouldn't be a dramatic change. I don't think teams would game plan for the extra point. I mean, I don't think they would say, well, we can't put him out there because if we happen to score a touchdown, he can't help us on the extra point. And I think obviously there'd be a bit of a fatigue factor as well. But I think that'd be something to look at, too, though, to see how teams would employ that. Like a maximum of two substitutions on the field after a touchdown for an extra point. But I actually like Greg's idea better, at least for as long as we're going to tinker and experiment. I think he's right. It might result in more two-point conversion attempts. I think he's right about that. Very interesting. Well, the league hasn't done anything yet about extra points, but they are going to meet. The owners are going to meet in May for their usual spring meetings, and at that point they're going to experiment with snapping the ball from the 15-yard line in extra points, an experiment just for the first couple of weeks of preseason. So it'd be about a 33-yard kick. They had been talking about moving it back to the 20, which would have made it a 38-yard kick. Now they're talking about a 33-yard kick. Still in the discussion phase, and we'll see what the owners do with that when they meet next month. All right, we got a lot more to come, including Ethan Albright, former Bills long snapper, going to join us at 8 o'clock tonight. Why are we talking to long snappers? Well, this one in particular is the color analyst on the North Carolina Tar Heels Football Radio Network. And Ethan Albright's going to give us his take on Eric Ebron, the tight end from Carolina, who is, you would think, pretty high on everybody's draft lists, including the Buffalo Bills. At 8:30 tonight, Steve Calhoun, who is E.J. Manuel's offseason quarterback guru. He'll join us from California. And coming up next, we're going to talk to the new pro scout for the Buffalo Bills, Gerald Dixon. He'll join us in studio to talk about his background and his job coming up. Got a lot more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Couple of weeks until the draft, and the Bills made some news on the personnel front today, not in players, but in scouting. They've announced the hiring of a new pro scout, and he joins us in studio right now, Gerald Dixon, the new pro scout for the Buffalo Bills. Welcome, Gerald. Good to have you in the studio.
Man, it's a pleasure to be here, man. It feels good to be back.
Yeah, back with the Buffalo Bills. You went to camp with the Buffalo Bills in 2004.
Correct.
10 years ago. Does it feel like 10 years ago?
Yeah, my body does, and I'm losing a little bit of my hair. I got about 3 gray hairs in my beard, so yeah, I'm I'm getting old.
That was now you came here. You had already been in the league a little bit, right, with the Detroit Lions. How long were you with Detroit before you came here?
I was there for 2 years.
Okay.
And then I went back to NFL Europe, and that's when I signed with Buffalo. That's when we used to go through that long stretch where you played 10 games in Europe.
Yeah.
And come right back over, and you're ready to go into camp. Probably had about 2 or 3 weeks. But
yeah.
That's part of the process.
Fred Jackson did that. I remember talking to him about that stretch. That was tough.
That was tough. But, you know, if you're a football player and that's what you want to do, you got to line up and just keep going.
So you came back here for what, a mini camp with Mike Mularkey and his crew here in the field house then?
Started mini camp right after the season. I think I had about 2 weeks off, if you can call it off. And then we got right back into mini camp, and then we had that little stretch and came right back into training camp August, June.
What do you remember about that coaching staff with Mularkey as the head coach? I believe Jerry Gray was the coordinator, right? And Steve Sabo was your defensive backs coach.
Defensive back. You know what? I saw Coach Sabo because we were both coaching. And good people, man. It was a good crew, you know. I didn't stick with it, but it was a good learning experience for me.
When you left the Bills, you still played a little football, right? You played in the CFL after that?
Went up to Canada and won the Grey Cup.
In Edmonton.
In Edmonton. It was fun. It's fun. It's football all over again. And my whole thing was, during that process, I just wanted to keep playing. You know, football was still fun to me, and I just wanted to get out and just keep playing.
Gerald, when you left the Bills, you were the final cutdown before the season, I believe, right?
Yeah, that was a tough one. You know, I thought I was close to making it. It was me and I believe Luke Lawton. Is that his name?
Yeah.
The fullback?
Yeah.
It was down to us. And I think a couple of things happened, and we needed a fullback, and we went with Luke instead of an extra DB, so... You know, things happen for a good reason.
There was some talent in that defensive backfield, right? With Clements was still here.
Nate was here.
Terrence McGee.
Was just coming on. Kevin Thomas, I want to say, was still here.
Yeah, Laurie Malloy was playing safety.
Was playing safety. Izell Reese, Rashad Baker was there. Jabari Greer. So it was a bunch of guys. I mean, it was some good football.
That's a tough lineup to crack.
Well, you know, I thought I had a chance, but listen, it wasn't in the writings for me. It wasn't on the walls. If that was the case, I probably wouldn't be sitting down talking to you right now.
We're with Gerald Dixon. He's a new pro scout for the Buffalo Bills. When your playing days ended, did you begin to coach right away, or what did you do?
You know what? When I finished up in Canada, moved down to Miami with my wife-to-be now, and I was working out, still trying to get back in, working out at high school. And a coach that saw me out there said, well, you know, what are you doing? I said, I'm just trying to work out, trying to get back in. And it was one of the guys that played at Alabama, Chris Magotis, Fagotis. And he's a legend down in South Florida. So, you know, he said, well, just come out and just help me. And you can train and do whatever you want to do. And after a while, I started liking it.
Coaching at a high school?
Coaching at a high school down at Coral Park High School.
Okay. Miami
area. Famous for Jose Canseco. That's the high school that Jose Canseco went to. And I just got into it, did a season down there, and then I got a call from my position coach in college, Chris Thurman. Said, well, you know, my buddy at the Citadel has there's a restricted earning job, a glorified GA.
Right.
Job open. How do you feel about it? I said, you know what? Nah, let's do it. So got a hold of that, interviewed, got the job, and found out that Kevin Higgins, which was a quarterback coach at Detroit Lions, was a head coach there. So I knew Kevin a little bit, and here I am. 8 years down in the Citadel and got an opportunity to get in the pro game now.
It's pretty good football down at the Citadel. It's football. It's FCS, right? But it's good football, Southern Conference, right?
FCS, SoCon. At that time, Georgia Southern was in there. Yeah. App State, UT, Chattanooga, Wofford, Elon, Furman, Western Carolina. So it was a good brand in Samford. It's a good brand of football. From my 8 years, we had two guys get drafted. Andre Roberts now playing for the Redskins, and the guy that I coached, Cortez Allen, playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So it was a good experience for me. Got married, got a young one down there. So all in all, it all worked out for the good.
Got to live in one of America's great cities, Charleston, South Carolina.
Right? Listen, if you haven't been, you need to go.
It's great down there.
You need to go.
Yeah. While you were there, was it different coaching than it's like a military academy almost, the Citadel, right? Was it a different type of player that you had to work with down there?
Well, you know what? A lot of people think it is, but again, the kids are kids, because when you look at the Citadel, a lot of people think it's just like the Service Academy, which sometimes it is, but it's only about 33% of the kids that actually go into the forces. So the other 67% of the kids are going to be your doctors, lawyers, your neighborhood mailmen. They're just going to be just ordinary people that's there. So when I look at it and I tell people about it, it's like a boarding school for military kids.
And as far as football teams, tell me what kind of success you had in your tenure at Citadel.
You know what? For my first... 4 years, it was rough. And then the last 3 years, we went back to running triple option, and we had some success. One game away from the playoffs every year after that.
You came from a kind of a totally different football, college football atmosphere as a player. You right. played in Alabama, which is the top of the heap when it comes to college football. Was it difficult to adjust to maybe a lower level at the Citadel?
You know what? At first, yeah, because playing a game, everyone that I played with from college on, our dream was to get to the NFL. And when you drop down a level, it's not every kid's dream to actually play in the NFL.
Right.
They just want to go out there and have fun. So it's not the passion, but the desire to get better and wanting to be the best was a little bit of a hang up to me. But yeah. A good coach sat me down and said, listen, if you care more than the kids, it's a problem. The kids got to care a little bit more than you do.
Yeah. And in your college career playing at Alabama, a lot of success there. Who's your coach? Who was your mentors when you were playing at Bama?
My first 2 years, Mike Dubose was our head coach. Then won the SEC championship my freshman year, came back, ranked number 2-1, somewhere around there, and we flopped. So on that staff, we had Dabo Swinney was on that staff. He was a receiver coach. Ellis Johnson was our defensive coordinator. My position coach was Charlie Harbison. So we had a pretty good staff, but we didn't fare so well in my second year. So they got fired. Then my final 2 years, Dennis Franchione came on.
Okay,
and we had went 8-5 his first year, went 10-3 our second year, but we couldn't go into the bowl games because we're on probation. You know.
Yeah.
It happens.
8-5, 10-3 doesn't cut it at Bama, really, does it?
Well, 10-3 does. 8-5, you're gonna have some problems.
Yeah, but I bet.
You know, the 10-3 season got Coach Fran a job at Texas A&M. So that was good for him.
We're with the Bills' new pro scout, Gerald Dixon, who joins the team today. Tell me what your duties will be moving into pro scouting. Well, first of all, tell me what the transition is going to be from all these years of coaching into scouting. It's a different skill set a little bit, isn't it?
Well, I look at it like this. I just don't have a whistle in my mouth anymore. And I'm not out there coaching, but I'm still evaluating players. And giving information to coaches. So it all ties together. Football is football. Either you know it or you don't. But it's just not my decision. I mean, it's not my job to go out there and tell the players what to do. I just get the information, pass it on to the right people, and then we go on from there.
And you told me as we sat down that one of your duties will be advanced scouting, looking at the Bills' upcoming opponents.
Correct.
I would think as a former coach, you would have a pretty good perspective on what a coach needs to hear about the opponents from a scout.
Well, that's a plan. But we're all coaches and everybody else is a little bit different. We're all wired a little bit different. So it's my job to sit in and find out what the coach wants and what the information that he does, and we'll get that done. But as right now, I haven't sat in with the coach yet.
Right.
Because the changeover in my zone, my second day on the job. So
right.
By the time we'll get around to it, we'll get it all done.
Hey, Gerald, when you approach this job as a pro scout, there's so much video available of opponents. I mean, shoot, I can go home now and watch all 22 on my little tablet.
Right.
What did you look to, like, supplement the video that the coaches have in front of them as they look at their opponents each week?
Well, you know what? Here's how I was looked at and was I was taught. All right. You just look at the game, and you just got to find tendencies. And over the past 8 years, that's what you do as a coach. You sit down, you watch the game, you see signals, see different tendencies on what they like to do first, second down, what the goal line packages look like, what they look like when they want to pass the ball on third down. So over a period of time, as you sit through it and you watch it, you start getting the tendencies and you start getting the feel of what that offensive coordinator wants to call or what that defensive coordinator wants to call. And overall, you just get the feel of it.
You know, I've observed over the years, even in our press box here at Ralph Wilson Stadium, about 45 minutes before kickoff, there's a row of pro scouts watching warm-ups. And if you don't want to bother them, because that's important right. to them, to watch who's moving well in warm-ups, who's bandaged up in a particular way. I mean, to the pro scout at a game site, what goes on an hour before kickoff is almost as important as what goes on after the game starts.
Right. Seems. I mean, you're out there doing your job. And it's just like when I used to go out on the road recruiting. You know, you have to sit there and you have to evaluate and do your job. And you're not there to talk and do all that and make friends. You're there to get the information that you need to pass on so your team can be successful.
How does, in your new position, and I know you're just getting started, how did what you do factor into free agency and decisions about free agency, which are, you know, 10 months away now, obviously?
Well, my job is, just to get correct information and pass it on to the decision makers and get the job done.
What do you think of this group? A couple of days on the job, the scouts that you work with, the personnel people, Jim Manos and his group?
Love them. Great people to work for. It's a pleasure for me just to be here. I'm happy. You see a smile on my face.
Yeah. Are you ready for the transition in weather from Charleston, South Carolina to Buffalo?
You know what? I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Okay.
And I've been in snow. I know it's what it is, and when you make your mind up to do something, you just got to do it.
You'll be all right.
I'll be fine.
It will. Thanks.
My wife will be fine, too.
Good to meet you. Thank you very much.
All right.
And he is the Buffalo Bills' new pro scout, Gerald Dixon, joining us in studio. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Gerald Dixon, thanks to him. He is the new pro scout for the Buffalo Bills. Added today, a couple of weeks before the NFL draft. 2 weeks from today, round one of the NFL draft. We're going to pick up the pace here in the next couple of weeks and talk more about the draft. And the Bills are holding their annual media draft day tomorrow with General Manager Doug Whaley and Director of College Scouting Calvin Fisher and Jim Monos, the Director of Player Personnel. All of them will meet the media today. We'll hear a lot of that tomorrow. And essentially, and this is the first year, obviously, with Doug Whaley being the guy as General Manager, but essentially they answer questions about some of the prospects. And you know what? If they're ever going to put out a smoke screen as to who they don't like or who they might want others to think they like or who they are interested in, tomorrow's the day to do it. It's always interesting. You get the answers, and then you kind of look for the subtext tomorrow. Like, what are they really trying to do here? You know, and it's sometimes it can be a praising a player, and sometimes it can be sort of lukewarm praise for a player. It's always interesting. It'll be tomorrow. You'll hear a lot of it on our show here tomorrow night. We hope to have some of the principals, Calvin Fisher in particular, tomorrow night. So the draft coverage picks up. The draft 2 weeks away from today, round one. And the Bills and M&T Bank have launched Predict the Picks. It's a draft contest. One fan will get an exclusive meet and greet with the Bills' first pick this year. Go to buffalobills.com/predictthepicks. When you go there, you'll be asked a series of 10 multiple-choice questions all about the 2014 Bills draft. Now, the contest runs through May 7th. The fans who correctly answer 80% or more of the questions are entered to win the grand prize. That grand prize is a meet and greet with the Bills' first pick this year. And 50 fans who answer at least half the questions right will get an official 2014 Bills draft cap by New Era Cap Company. So, again, you've got a couple of weeks left. The contest runs through May 7th. Day one of the draft is May 8th, 8 p.m. Only one entry per person is permitted. All entries must be submitted by 11:59 p.m. Wednesday, May 7th. BuffaloBills.com/predictthepicks. Go to BuffaloBills.com for that. It is sponsored by the Bills and M&T Bank. We've been talking about the NFL meetings coming up and a proposal to change the extra points, at least experiment with an extra point change, moving the kick back to the 15-yard line, which would make it about a 33-yard kick. We have a caller on the line right now to talk about that and extra points in general. Tim in Chautauqua. Are you there, Tim?
Yeah, hi, Murphy. I just want to let you know I like your show.
Thank you.
The way you handle things very professionally.
Thank you.
Anyhow, hey, you know, I'm not so much about this, you know, maybe, you know, putting the, 15 yards back, but a pet peeve of mine has always been they should push the hash marks back where they should have been a long time ago originally. You know, changes the dynamics of the game, and not to mention if the league is looking for some excitement when it gets down down to the goal line, it really makes the team consider how if it's, you know, third and short and they can't make it. It changes the dynamics of the game because if all of a sudden they're on an outside hash mark where they line up, they're going to have a hard time kicking that 3 points. And so that would, to me, would make a little more excitement to the game.
Doesn't it change offense, though, too, in terms of a wide side of the field? And I don't know if it changes offense for the better, does it? I mean, it's almost
I think it does because it makes a strong side and a weak side, like in college. You know, it gives you more – to me, it really gives you more flexibility and more options because you can, you know – you can play to your strengths on one side or the other against a team because you actually get like another, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 yards and can change it. But I just remember going back and watching some of these old NFL championship games where, you know, a strategy is really out there because you don't know if the guy, you know, don't get in and you're down at the 1 yard line, that's a heck of a kick.
Yeah.
You know, for a 3 point shot.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my opinion. I think the game changed a lot when they, you know, pulled the, pull the hash marks back
right.
in. That was just, you know, my two take on that. Yeah. Or I don't know, maybe a bizarro thing you could have a variant.
No, it's an interesting thought, Tim. It's an interesting thought. Thanks for calling in. My thought is, though, that they probably moved the hash marks in to help the offense, to open up the field for offense, not really taking the extra point kicks too much in consideration. They want to force you to defend the entire field. If you've got hash marks out to, say, where the college line is, the defense gets an advantage as far as a short side and a wide side. It'd be easier to defend, I think, quite frankly. And I have a feeling that's why the hash marks were moved a little bit tighter in the NFL and professional football in order to open things up to force you to defend the entire field. But let me bounce that idea off some smart people in the game and see what they say. It's a pretty good idea. All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. We're going to talk about the draft in 2 weeks, and maybe the Bills go with Eric Ebron in the first round, the tight end from North Carolina. We'll get the scoop on Eric Ebron from Ethan Albright, former Bills long snapper, who's now the color analyst on the North Carolina Tar Heels Football Network. He'll be joining us on the line when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, hold hands. Let's go check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are 2 weeks away from the National Football League draft, day one of the NFL draft, the first round, and many of the draft experts have linked the Buffalo Bills to the North Carolina tight end, Eric Ebron. You see that a lot, and you may see it even more as the draft approaches. We are on the line now with a man who saw most of Eric Ebron's games this past year. He is a former North Carolina Tar Heel standout himself, and he's part of the Tar Heel Sports Radio Network as a football analyst for North Carolina football. He is also a former Buffalo Bill, former long snapper for the Bills, Ethan Albright, on the line with us. Ethan, how are you? Good to talk to you again. How you doing?
Doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You are doing a little radio down there. Tell us, before we talk about Eric Ebron, tell us what you've been up to since your football playing days ended, 7 or 8 years ago now, right?
You bet. I retired in 2010.
Oh, okay, 4 years.
And since then, I've done what most players do, had several various surgeries on body parts, got healthy, and I've gotten into coaching. However, not football. I've got daughters, and I've gotten into girls' fast-pitch softball. I'm the high school coach, and I've also gotten involved with the North Carolina Coaches Association in being involved with all the high school coaches here in the state of North Carolina and working with the state's annual East-West All-Star Game. I run a Play 60 Kids Clinic in the summer and tie it into the All-Star Game and make it a community event. It's been a lot of fun.
No, that's good.
As well as doing the radio for Tar Heels.
Yeah. Where are you in North Carolina? Where do you live?
I'm right in Greensboro, in the central part of the state.
Okay. Tell me how you got involved in Tar Heel Radio Network and doing the North Carolina games this past year.
Like a lot of things in life, just dumb luck. Kind of like my career. Who knew I could be a long snapper for as long as I was? I started playing. I got to just getting in the community and putting my name out there, and I got involved with doing ESPN high school radio. That led to a connection with the Tar Heel Sports Network that just happened to open up. The color analyst moved on to a different position in the athletic department, and they were looking for somebody. I was happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, that's a lot of it goes into it, right, the success part of it. But 16 years in the NFL, Ethan, including a Pro Bowl appearance in 2007, that's got to be one of the great long-snapping careers, I would think, in NFL history. Would you agree?
I think if you look at the record book, I am the current record holder for most consecutive games played by a long snapper.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a nice – it was a great run. I loved it.
How many games consecutively do you know offhand?
Offhand, I do not.
Okay.
I want to say it was 220 and 233 totals. I did have one injury, missed a few my rookie year, and learned not to get hurt because you get replaced.
Well, you know, Ethan, it's funny. I know when you played at North Carolina, you went in there as a tight end when you were playing college football, right, with Mac Brown down
at
North Carolina. How did you make
the... I put on the freshman 20 every year of college, and I became a tackle.
Okay. And how did you finally transition over to long snapping?
Long snapping is something I did when I was a kid. I was always the only kid on the team that could snap for whatever reason, peewees, junior high school, and college. I never, when I played, it wasn't a position in itself. You always played something else, and I was a tight end for a long time, and then I was a backup lineman. and long snapping just worked out for me.
Yeah, I would say so. You started with the Dolphins, right, and then you came here to the Buffalo Bills, and you had a pretty good unit there, right? Steve Christie was the kicker for the most part, and Chris Moore was the punter for most of your time here, right?
You're exactly right. And Bruce DeHaven was special teams coach, and Marv Levy put such emphasis on special teams, and it was fantastic. It was great camaraderie, and we had a great unit.
I don't think, if memory serves, you ever had a bad snap in your 5 years in Buffalo, right?
If you can't find it on video, it didn't happen.
I mean, I can't recall one. I know Christie was automatic. The whole unit was pretty automatic when you guys had it going on there in the late 1990s. No, I wouldn't find it on tape. I don't think it's there. You guys really, it was like a finely tuned machine with Steve Christie kicking. And who was your holder most of the time back then? Was it Moore?
Chris Moore was a holder, and he's a big 6'5 guy that I didn't have to be perfect. Hey, he could catch anything, get it down, hit the spot, and Steve would hit the kicks. And, hey, if you weren't perfect, we were good enough to cover it up.
Yeah.
And still make the kick and be good enough.
What were some of your favorite games during that five-year tenure here in Buffalo, Ethan? I mean, you played in the famous home run throwback playoff game. That might not be at the top of your list, right?
It's a memorable one, but for the wrong reasons, obviously.
Yeah.
When we converted that kick with about 17 seconds on the clock, we thought we had won a home away playoff game, which is extremely hard to do. Boy, things change fast. But one of the most memorable games for me is the very first game when I got to Buffalo. I got cut by Jimmy Johnson, the last cut at training camp. 3 days later, I got signed by the Bills with an open-ended ticket. They said, Ethan, we're going to try you out. And, you know, being a young player, I didn't know exactly how it worked. Hey, if we like you, we'll keep you. You don't need the ticket. If we don't like you, we'll send you home. I said, okay, well, what do I need to prepare for the tryout? They said, well, we have a Sunday night national game against the Giants. You're going to play in the game. If everything goes well, we'll keep you.
Wow.
And we, sure enough, the game came down to a field goal to tie it. But in the regulation, we made it. And then we won it in overtime on a field goal.
Yeah.
And they said, ready to go.
Wow. And you stayed here 5 years. Then you went to the Washington Redskins for 9 years. That had to be some great years with the Redskins. Joe Gibbs was your coach there, right?
Well, it's neat for me. Joe Gibbs was the coach. And when I was a high school player in North Carolina, Joe Gibbs and the Hogs was it.
Yeah.
And so I got to play for one of my childhood heroes, and that was really special for me.
And then you finished up in San Diego, as you said, 2010. How old were you when you finally got out of the game, Ethan?
I was 39 when I got to San Diego, and I'd already had one back surgery. It took me one practice to figure out I should not have done that. It took them 2 weeks to figure it out.
Wow, that's great. Ethan Albright, 16 years, a long snapper in the NFL, including five of them with the Buffalo Bills. He is now part of the Tar Heel Sports Radio Network. He is a color analyst on North Carolina football games. And that's, we want to shift gears and ask you about a guy who's on the minds of a lot of Bills fans these days, Ethan. Eric Ebron, tight end from North Carolina, who is a junior entry to the draft this year. Is he ready to make an impact in the NFL, do you think?
I think he is ready. He presents a lot of problems because he, to me, I would list him as an athlete. Versatile end. You can't cover him with a linebacker. If you put a DB on him, you audible to a run, and he's got a huge advantage in the running game. He just presents a lot of problems with his speed and size combination.
I've watched a couple of Ebron's games, including this morning I watched a game against Pittsburgh, I believe a road game against Pittsburgh. What impressed me, Ethan, was how they moved him around. He's sometimes an inline tight end. He's sometimes like a slot guy. Sometimes they move him all the way out to the outside. It seems like sometimes they line him up in the backfield, as a matter of fact. They seem to find ways to shake Eric Ebron loose down there at North Carolina.
That's why I consider him an athlete. He can line up anywhere on the field, and he knows how to get open. He can beat his own defense. And you got to put a DB on him to cover a man-to-man.
He ran, I believe, a 4.59 at the combine, which is pretty good for a tight end. I would think that's the type of speed that teams can utilize in their offense, right?
That's the speed. Coaches can't coach speed. When you have a guy that's 250 and runs a 4.5, hey, that's an intangible that coaches can't teach. They'll take a chance on that guy any day of the week.
What do you think, I mean, people, as you know, Ethan, this time of year are trying to poke holes in all these draft prospects, and when they get to Eric Ebron, people talk about he has trouble blocking maybe. Is he a liability as far as blocking tight end, would you think?
No, well, if you line him up and you put him on a 270, 280-pound defensive end, a lot of guys struggle in that before. He's down 30 pounds, but he just presents so many matchup problems. No, I would not say blocking is a liability for him. He can do it. He'll get better at it when you work at it. You can't coach somebody else to run 4.5 when you weigh 250.
Yeah, and if you're asking him to block a lot, you're probably asking him. You're probably not using him the best way that you could as far as his skill set, I would think, huh?
You're exactly. You want him down the field. You want him hurting the defense and stretching the defense.
Hey, Ethan, it's one thing to run, you know, deep and get deep against cornerbacks and defensive backs in college football. How do you think he'll be able to do it in the NFL?
I think he was smart enough to find the open spots and against zone defenses. You get him, well, he can turn a 5-yard out route into a 30-yard pass the way that he can run. If you try to tackle him one-on-one in the open field, that's when he's at his best because he can make the first guy miss and just presents a lot of problems for you.
What do you think? How early should this guy be drafted? I mean, is he a top 10 pick? Is he that good, do you think?
Oh, I think so for sure. He can really, just looking at him, when he can do things others can't, you got to take a chance on.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. We're with Ethan Albright, former Bills long snapper, who has watched Eric Ebron, the tight end, is in Ethan's role as part of the broadcast team at North Carolina. Just one more thing, Ethan. What kind of a guy is Eric Ebron? What kind of a teammate do you think he was?
You know, I was only there for a year, so I didn't get to know him off the field. But teammates seem to be very well liked by his teammates. By all accounts, he's a good guy.
All right, we'll see. Maybe he'll wind up here in a Buffalo Bills uniform. Maybe it'll work out. Hey, Ethan, it's great to catch up with you. Thanks for your insight into Eric Ebron, and I hope we get another chance to talk to you sometime.
Anytime, John. Thanks for the call.
Ethan Albright, who played long snapper for the Bills for 5 years, went from here to the Washington Redskins, played 9 years there, a 16-year career in the league as a long snapper. Pretty amazing. You heard him say he believes he's got the consecutive games played record for long snappers in NFL history. Pretty good guy, and making his mark now at his alma mater on the radio network of the North Carolina Tar Heels. So he saw a lot of Eric Ebron last year, the big tight end. I'm beginning to look more into Eric Ebron for a couple of reasons. Just from what I've been hearing and reading about Ebron, I actually, as I mentioned to Ethan, watched it in one game, and it's pretty easy to watch now on the internet, watch college prospects. And I watched him play against Pittsburgh, and as I said to Ethan Albright, very impressed with just how he moved around playing different positions. They almost like they were showcasing him at Carolina. You know, they'd split him out wide. They'd put him as an inline tight end. They'd line him up in the backfield. And I've heard a lot about his blocking, and at least in the Pittsburgh game that I watched, and I watched a couple of games several weeks ago of Ebron, he was a willing blocker. Was he an overpowering, mauling tight end blocker? No. But he kind of stuck his nose in there and tried to do it, and that had some effectiveness as a blocker. He's a physical mismatch at tight end, Ebron. He's 6'4", 250 pounds, a 4.59 in the 40-yard dash. What do you think? I mean, 2 weeks away from the draft, is this where the Bills are going, the tight end Eric Ebron? Would you be on board with that? Let us know. The phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us on Twitter. In fact, got a tweet from Spartan Johnny who says, if we take an old lineman at 9, I think it'll be another long year. EJ needs Ebron. Take a tackle in the second or third. Maybe the way they're thinking upstairs when the Bills scouts and coaches sit down over the next few days here to plan for the draft 2 weeks away. There's depth on the offensive line. Essentially, they need a right tackle. There are some very good tackles, three very good tackles up front in this draft, but a weapon like Eric Ebron may be the way to go. And you know what also has me thinking hard about this? My old pal Bill Polian, who, it's no secret, I admire his work, I listen to him a lot. I listened to him on the radio just today, I think it was today, talking about the philosophy of the Indianapolis Colts when he drafted for them. And he said, this is a philosophy that we shared with me, Tony Dungy, and even Marv Levy back in the Buffalo Bills days. Polian's contention was, and I'm paraphrasing, if you're drafting in the first 10 picks, like the Bills are this year, number 9, this is Polian talking. He said, you better get a player who can either score points or prevent points from being scored. Think about that. If you got a top 10 pick, a premium pick in the first round, get a guy who can either score points or prevent points from being scored. Now, I like the work in the trenches. I know offensive linemen are valuable. They're not scoring points. Tight ends can score points. Quarterbacks can produce points. Running backs, receivers especially, can produce points. On the defensive side of the ball, preventing points, now you're talking cornerback. This is Polian's theory. You're talking cornerback or maybe a pass rusher who can disrupt an offense and prevent points. But Polian's contention is if you're drafting in the top 10, you want to get a player who can either score points or directly prevent points from being scored. which kind of takes you away from the tackles and maybe into Eric Ebron. You might have some thoughts on that. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, it's 1-888-550-2550. You know who has thoughts on Eric Ebron? It might not surprise you. Mel Kiper Jr. He's got thoughts on everybody. Mel Kiper Jr. has some interesting thoughts on Eric Ebron, and he made himself available for a conference call yesterday to talk about some of the prospects. Mel Kiper Jr. in an earlier post said that he believes Eric Ebron could go as high as 7 or as low as 18 to the New York Jets. That's what Kiper thinks about the chances of, you know, and right in the middle of that, obviously, would be the Buffalo Bills at number 9. But here's what Mel Kiper thinks about Eric Ebron. It's not all glowing praise. In fact, he raises red flags about Ebron's willingness and his ability to participate in the run game.
That's one thing he's not going to help you with. He's not going to block. And, you know, and he's going to be a little inconsistent catching the ball. But he improved in that area this year. But, you know, he's not the toughest guy out there. You know, you watch him, and there's some opportunities he has to go up for the football, and, you know, goes up a little passively at times. So I think Ebron's a talent. If you can maximize all that, you got a big-time pass-catching, you know, basically a glorified wide receiver with Ebron.
That's Mel Kiper, his thoughts on Eric Ebron. And, you know, Mel Kiper certainly watched more tape than I have when it comes to all of these prospects in the draft. I have not seen him not come down with the ball very often. In fact, I see him being kind of a pain in the neck for opposing defenses to try to cover when he gets downfield and sort of splits the defense. In his latest mock draft, Mel Kiper Jr. had Ebron going number 12 to the New York Giants. He had the Bills at number 9 taking Jake Matthews. Here's what Mel Kiper Jr. wrote about Eric Ebron at number 12. Here's a case where you can accuse me of projecting a team to take the same player I would if it were my decision. Ebron is a potential difference maker for the next stage of Eli Manning's career. Big target in the passing game who can create constant matchup problems with his size and quickness underneath and down the field with his speed and catch radius. Again, his size. Giants, this is Kiper continuing. The Giants have had 4 different tight ends catch the most passes at that position over the last 4 years. They could use a really good one. Well, so could the Bills, by the way. So could the Bills use some matchup problems. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Let's take a few calls. KD in Florida. Hi, KD. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Murph.
Sure.
Hey, first of all, I wanted to say, man, did you grow up in Buffalo?
Yeah, Lockport, New York.
Oh, okay. Because, man, you are so feisty, man. I like when you dig into people's butt. And you do it, and you do it with such professionalism.
I haven't done that. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? I haven't done that to anybody.
Yeah, okay. All right. I know you haven't. Yeah, I was listening to you earlier.
Okay.
But you do it so eloquently.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say is I think we should definitely, if Ebron is there, based on just going back and looking at video of him, I mean, the kid is definitely a game breaker. You know, and he doesn't, you don't have to throw the ball to him. He's so versatile that he can do the intermediate and his run after the catch is just so crazy. I mean, he can break away or either he can go down the field and actually burn a defensive back. Now, maybe I think with coaching, he'll get better at blocking, but that's not going to be really his forte like your guess said earlier.
Right.
His forte is going to be a game breaker, and I just think if he's there at 9, and I would take him over Evan any day.
Really?
Thanks for taking my call, Merv.
All right, thanks, KD. I wanted to ask you, you're gone. KD is gone. Are you still there, KD? Are you still on the line? He's gone. He mentioned watching games, and this is something that folks should know. In the current age, it's pretty easy to watch these prospects. We got 2 weeks left of the draft, so maybe you're a casual draft fan, and you hear all these opinions about Eric Ebron and the offensive linemen and you know, some of the wide receivers, and you know, you don't get a chance to sit down and camp out in front of the TV during the college football season. I'm going to give you a website to look at here. Ready? Draftbreakdown.com. One word, draftbreakdown.com. Video of essentially every prospect. Jay Harris, producer, have you seen this website?
No, I'm going to go to it right now.
I've been on it for a couple of months here. And so and this is me. I'm weird. I woke up today thinking, wow, the draft's in 2 weeks. I need another look at Eric Ebron. So what do? On my little tablet, go to draftbreakdown.com. And I think I've got essentially every Eric Ebron game from last year. Today I watched the Pitt game. I'll probably watch a few more of him. I'll probably watch a lot more players over the next 2 weeks. But just a little tip for anybody. Again, you don't have to be a draft nut, but people are into this. And if you're interested in, as opposed to reading Mel Kiper's opinions or any of the guests we have on or a local radio host, and you'd like to make up your own mind and you want to look at video, draftbreakdown.com, a very good, solid website. In fact, Jay, I thought we should probably get somebody from this website on the radio show in the next few weeks.
We'll discuss that after the show, John.
All right. Hopefully I'll get your permission to do that. But it's
John,
just solid.
You make a good point with this website because all you see normally when you look up a draft prospects, and expect not so much in offensive linemen, but with tight ends and wide receivers and in those active positions, you only see the highlights,
right.
You know? And
right.
So this is great. You're going to see them in the plays that they're not so much involved catching the ball. You're going to see them blocking.
See how Eric Ebron blocks.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah, it's a good website. They actually highlight. So if you go and look up Eric Ebron before the snap of these games, and it's all edited down, you're not going to need to spend 3 hours watching one game. They will highlight, boom, here's Ebron. Watch him on this play. And so you can see if he blocks. You can see if he likes to block. DraftBreakdown.com. That's a heck of a plug we just gave him. Now they need to be on the show. Bobby in Kentucky. Hello, Bobby. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, I was one of the people. I kind of wanted them to go, you know, with Manziel because I think it would sell tickets. But, you know, after realizing they're not going to do it, I saw Ebron on Sports Science.
Yeah.
And they have him, you know, his, what they're saying is he gets off the ball within, you know, 0.2 seconds with 1,200 pounds of force, which is enough to knock a 300-pound guy back 2 feet. And then his hands are 30% bigger, I guess, than average. And he caught a pass through, like, a little window, you know, and I guess he had, like, a quarter of a second to react to it. And his range is about 3% bigger than Gronkowski, even though he's 2 inches shorter.
Wow.
So, like, I'm sold on the guy. I think that if you get a guy like that, I mean, it should help Manuel for sure. I mean, you got a guy over the middle you can throw the ball to, and if Manuel doesn't work out, it might help bring in a free agent, you know, perhaps Cam Newton in 2015.
Yeah. Okay. You're down the line a little bit, but I don't know if Carolina's going to let Cam Newton get away, but you're right about the hands. I'm looking at the measurables now. 10-inch hand size, which is, you know, at or near the top end of hand size at that position. Not very, very many have hands bigger than 10 inches. And let's be honest, there are negatives on Eric Ebron. Mel Kiper talked about the fact that, you know, you're getting a glorified wide receiver. I'm reading Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft. They say Ebron needs to improve his inline blocking. Okay. Perfunctory effort and lower body strength. The effort part would concern me if I were a scout, Bill Scout or whoever. I'd want to know more about that, and I'm sure they want to know more about that as well. Let's go to Mike in Niagara Falls. Hello, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark. Yeah, I think with the addition of Williams and our receivers core that we have right now, I think if you draft Eric Ebron, it's going to make it difficult on the defenses that we're playing against. It's going to open up not only the middle of the field for EJ, but it's also going to open up people on the outside, especially if you put Goodwin out there. There's somebody out there that can stretch the field. So I think it's going to improve our passing game, but also allow us to stretch the field a little bit more. So I think Eric Ebron would be a very good pick, and he would be an impact player right away too, I believe.
Yeah, and I think we got 2 weeks. We're going to talk more about this. Thanks for your call, Mike. I think that what you're looking at with Ebron is not necessarily a guy who will carry this offense on his back. And he doesn't have to. He can be a very good, strong, complementary player on this Buffalo Bills offense. And we're going to assume that E.J. Manuel is ready to play 16 games and ready to take the next step. We talked about that at length a couple of nights ago. We're going to assume that Stevie Johnson will have a good year. They have a dynamic running back in C.J. Spiller and a very good, solid running back in Fred Jackson. They have the makings of a pretty good offensive line, at least two or three good offensive linemen. And so Ebron doesn't have to carry the offense. He could be, at least initially, a complementary piece and maybe a kind of a game-changing type complementary piece to the offense from time to time. I think there's a lot to like about that. He actually, I don't know if you caught this a couple of, you know, he was in here on a visit 3 weeks ago now. Was that 3 weeks ago? Yeah, 3 weeks ago, April 4th. And Peter King, after that, said that he thinks the Buffalo Bills are going to be one of the teams that are going to draft him. That's what Eric Ebron said. He said, this is Peter King quoting Eric Ebron, There are two teams I believe are high on me, the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions, two teams that I believe are the highest on me right now. Of course, you know, the Bills will make everybody feel good when they come in for visits, but that's interesting to think of, that maybe even Ebron sensed when he visited here 3 weeks ago that the Buffalo Bills could be the team. I'm not saying that he is, but I'm saying that I have renewed interest in Eric Ebron after watching some video today and after talking to Ethan Albright about it today. And all along I've been thinking, you know, a tight end at number nine, that's a high for a tight end. But the more I watch of him, the more I see the potential that might be there. A couple of tweets. Andy Proven tweets in, if Ebron won't block and can't catch, like Kuiper says, how is he a first-round prospect? Kuiper didn't say he can't catch. He didn't say that at all. He can catch. He can. He's a threat downfield. And won't block, I think, is subjective. I don't know if he won't block. Kyle Wojciechowski says, wouldn't you consider other positions other than tight end due to the re-signing of Chandler and the Tony Moyaki pickup? Yes, I would. And I've been stuck there for the last month or two, ever since the combine. I've been stuck on that. You know, they have Chandler. They have Moyaki. They're converting Brandon Kaufman over to tight end. They have Chris Gregg, who was a tight end a year ago, seventh-round pick. They have options at tight end. But there's a chance here to get what could be a pretty special player at a position where they don't have a crying need, but still a pretty special player for an offense that needs playmakers. I'm not sold on it yet, but I'm moving in that direction on Eric Ebron. We'll talk more about this. Round one of the draft, just 2 weeks away, and a lot more discussion to come. We're going to take a break, and we're going to go back, circle back, and talk about E.J. Manuel when we return. You may have heard E.J. a couple of days ago talk about the time he spent with quarterback guru Steve Calhoun out in California this past year. He's had a longstanding relationship with Steve Calhoun. We're going to talk with Steve Calhoun when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight, this is from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
So, we got our man crush with Eric Ebron, and got that out of the way for a little bit. I don't know. I 2 weeks ago to the draft, I might change my mind again, and I haven't made up my mind on anything yet, but I've just taken a second look at Eric Ebron and thought a little bit more about what a guy like that can mean. I guess a month or so ago, my thinking was, a tight end at nine, that's high for a tight end. But maybe this guy is the type of tight end who belongs there. By the way, I mentioned how much I respect Bill Polian's opinions. He did also say today that Ebron is not the type of guy who should go at number nine. He didn't mention my name, but I got my inference that he did not think Eric Ebron was the kind of guy who merits number nine overall. Still got time to think about this and talk about this. The draft, 2 weeks from today, 8 o'clock tonight. Let's think. Probably be right about now, 2 weeks from today, number nine, Buffalo Bills, to be on the clock. So maybe that's how it'll go down here, 2 weeks from today. Well, if you listen to us Monday night, or if you're paying attention to the Bills, I guess it was Tuesday night, or paying attention to Bills on Tuesday, first day of the voluntary off-season conditioning program, and E.J. Manuel stepped up to the podium, talked about all the work he's done this past off-season, including the work he's done with our next guest. Our next guest is on the line with us live, Steve Calhoun. He is the man behind Armed and Dangerous Football Camp. Steve, good evening. Thanks for being on the air with us tonight.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, thank you for having me on.
Sure. Hey, I want to play you what E.J. said. This is E.J. Manuel on Tuesday talking to the media here about part of his offseason work, which included some time with you, Steve Calhoun. Here's what he said.
I mainly did my work with Steve Calhoun. He has Armed and Dangerous Football camps or whatever it's called, but he's like my quarterback trainer, I guess you could say, and he's helped me out a lot, especially with the footwork and everything. You know, after my knees healed up, you had to kind of get back into it, actual movements that you were doing in the game, so he helped me out a lot.
That's E.J. Manuel on Steve Calhoun. That's a pretty good endorsement, I would think, Steve, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Hey. I appreciate that.
Hey, tell me about your work with first of all, tell me about the work in general. It seems to me this private quarterback coach thing is sort of like a growing cottage industry that guys like you are popping up all over the place, especially out in California, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, the quarterback position is so technical. Now, I kind of compare it to a golf swing or a golfer. You know, every golfer, you see on the PGA Tour has their own swing coach, and that's how quarterbacking is. Everybody has their own guy that they kind of go to make sure all their footwork and their throwing mechanics are nice and tight.
I know you played some quarterback. In fact, you played in Europe and some professional football. Tell me about your background, Steve, and what you did to bring you to this point.
Well, I played in college.
at New Mexico State University, and then I was fortunate enough to go actually go play in Germany in their professional league out there for 9 years. And so once I got back from that, wanted to continue to coach, was coaching a couple of young men, some young high school kids on throwing mechanics and forward, just kind of just going through, you know, what I've learned, and they ended up becoming, you know, some top quarterbacks in the state of California. So my brother told me, hey, you found your niche. This is something that you should be doing. And he came up with the name Armed and Dangerous, and it's been going since then.
Yeah, and it's a niche, as I said, it's been growing. I mean, everybody follows George Whitfield now. We know that game. Ken Mastroli, who has done some work with EJ. Why do you think there has been that explosion of quarterback coaches, like you said, golf swing-type coaches? Why is that something that's kind of grown up in the last few years, Steve?
Well, I think, you know, the game has kind of revolved to you have to have a great quarterback in order to win football games. So the more pressure or the more focus has been on the quarterbacks to really perform, I think that's, you know, how our business of being a private quarterback coach has evolved. You know, we've become a more important role, have gotten a better role.
Yeah, how big a part of what you do as a quarterback coach is with the high school kids and the prospects, and how you know, how important is that to get them young, to get them started off on the right foot?
I think it's very important, very important. You know, for a really good example, another quarterback that I'm training that's coming out in the draft this year, his name is Keith Price from out of the University of Washington. And I started training him when he was a freshman in high school. So for the last 8 years, we've been working, you know, on his throwing mechanics and footwork, and to be able to do his pro day just a couple of weeks ago, to kind of all have it come back together. It was pretty exciting. So it is very important to start at a young age.
Yeah, and
it's so technical.
Yeah, before we get into your work with EJ, Steve, I wonder, were there any influences on you, any quarterback coaches or offensive people that we may have heard of that you kind of adopted their principles and philosophy of teaching the quarterback position?
Well, you know, everything that I learned was from a gentleman named Tom Schein, who was my quarterback coach and offensive coordinator at Santa Ana Junior College. And, you know, he was the first one who really talked to me about the importance of your balance and your footwork and foot placement and arm angles and how you extend your arm and pronate your thumb and all those little details. And I always had a great arm and could throw it, but I'd never heard somebody explain it and be able to break it down that technical.
Yeah.
So I basically took what he taught me and I just started to build on it.
Before we get to EJ, because I find this fascinating, you probably have seen video or you know, NFL films of quarterbacks with less than perfect mechanics. I mean, I go way back, but I'm thinking Joe Capp of the Minnesota Vikings in the 70s and guys who just got it done. Do you think that could happen anymore? Somebody who doesn't have proper mechanics and just sort of flings it around and tries to move his team down the field, can that succeed anymore in professional football?
You know what? I think he can. I think he can. I think it has to be really a really special individual. Person that comes to mind is Brett Favre.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have great footwork or throwing mechanics, but he had an unbelievable, you know, he could throw it. And wherever he wanted to throw it, he could get it there. Even though he was off balance, you know, he was a special talent. So it can be done, but I think for the majority of us who are just kind of normal quarterbacks, I think, you know, then the footwork and the throwing mechanics are really important.
We're live on the line with Steve Calhoun. He's a quarterback coach and guru in California with his Armed and Dangerous football camp. What was your first exposure to E.J. Manuel, Steve? When did you first get a hold of him?
Well, I was able to connect with E.J. the summer before his senior year at Florida State.
Okay.
So we were able, you know, I went out to Virginia Beach and was able to work with him there and really just started to kind of unteach him, you know, because he had picked up some bad habits. And, you know, my program, I basically create a drill for every possible movement you can make in a game. We drill it and drill it and drill it and then just have it become muscle memory. And now the body just kind of is on autopilot and the mind is just free to think about coverages and reads and stuff like that. So that's where it started from, you know, 2 years ago.
Was EJ referred to you? Did he reach out to you? How did that initial contact take place, Steve?
Well, you know, I was supposed to train EJ for the draft through an agency that was trying to recruit him, you know, as a client who I have done work for. They, you know, initially made that contact,
And so they connected me with EJ about a potential client and training him for that upcoming his upcoming draft that year.
What were your initial impressions of EJ Manuel a couple of years ago? Maybe the good points and the stuff that he needed to work on a couple of years ago.
You know, I was surprised by how big he was. How big he was and how he was such a really good athlete. But with him being such a good athlete, his fundamentals, you know, his balance wasn't really there. But I knew he was a good athlete, and I'm like, man, if we can just refine the fundamentals of having great balance when he throws, and I believe balance leads to accuracy. And that's where it started, and to see him grow over the last month or so, it's been really incredible.
Yeah, now, correct me if I'm wrong, you did not spend much, if any, time with EJ before the draft or after the draft last year. I mean, he had kind of a busy social calendar last summer at this time, didn't he?
He sure did. He sure did. You know, we've always kept in contact, and you know, always wished him luck. And we talked about you know, different games and situations he's in.
Yeah.
And you know, he reached out to me after the season and said, "Hey, I need to get back to you, and you know, I need you to get me to the Pro Bowl."
Yeah.
And I said, "Hey, if you give me the time, I will get you there."
What did you watch much of his rookie year? Did you watch any video or watch any games?
Yeah, I watched every game.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I watched every game. I thought he, you know, did a good job. I think it's really hard for rookie quarterbacks to step in and have a lot of success in the NFL just because the game is so different. It's hard to learn how to play at that speed. So for him to be kind of thrown in the fire, I thought he did a good job. I think he did a real good job having a rookie head coach, you know, so to say. And so everybody was kind of just learning to get on the same page. So that's why I'm really excited about this upcoming year. They're going to have a, you know, second year together. They're going to know each other a little bit more. He, you know, my work with EJ is definitely going to develop him even better as an accurate passer. So I'm excited. I'm excited for this season to happen.
What can you tell us the focus of your work with EJ this past off season? What kind of stuff were you working on?
You know, when I'm training quarterbacks, I always start with their feet and then build them up from there. So him coming off the knee injury, you know, he was a little bit ginger, and I was like, "Does the knee hurt?" And he's like, "No." I said, "Okay, well, let's run on it. Let's cut." And,
yeah.
And so, and but that's always, you know, when guys are coming off an injury, they're scared to go 100%. So my main focus was, let's get him on the jump rope. So, you know, and I think the jump rope for quarterbacks, you know, is crucial because, I mean, you know, everything you do as a quarterback are with your feet. When you want to set your feet, 5-step, 7-step, whatever it is. So that's where I started. And then the next thing was, you know, to make the adjustment of his throwing mechanics. Because when you see EJ throw, his right arm comes across his body. So, you know, him having a basketball background, and I said, no. I said, I want your arm to go directly towards your target, to extend your arm. So I said, if you're shooting a free throw, you wouldn't extend your arm up and over towards your left shoulder. He's like, no. I said, okay. So the football follows your arm. So when you throw the football, extend your arm towards your target because the ball follows your arm. So that's what we've been working on when he was in California for the week. And then I just got back spending a week with him in Miami, and he's made a drastic change. So, I mean, I'm really excited about it.
And how many reps does he need to get to the point where he doesn't have to think about that? Probably an infinite number, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you never can stop working on your throwing mechanics.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, you know, kind of related back to golf, you see Tiger Woods, as good as he is and how many championships and things he's won, he still has a golf coach. He still has a swing coach.
Yeah.
So it's just so technical. You need somebody there to identify just the little details that you can't really feel.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, Steve. I wish we had more time to talk to you. Maybe we can get back in touch with you, you know, as the season moves along, maybe your observations on EJ and his throwing mechanics. Would that be all right?
That would be great. Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on again.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, listen, if anybody's listening interested, maybe a high school player, I know it's a long way from Buffalo to Southern California, but you'll take anybody at your football camps out there, right?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to be in New Jersey August 2nd and 3rd in Denville, New Jersey.
What's the best way to get a hold of you? The website, Armed and Dangerous?
Yes, sir. ArmedandDangerousFootball.com on my website.
All
yes,
right.
Sir.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Okay, appreciate you.
Steve Calhoun, he is the quarterback guru. His football camp's armedanddangerousfootball.com. You can read more about him and more about his football camps. As he said, he's bringing it east in a couple of weeks. Some fascinating stuff about the work he's done with Bills quarterback E.J. Manuel. We'll wrap it up in a minute or two. Stick around. We've got a little more to come. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
That's some really good stuff, I thought, from Steve Calhoun, the quarterback coach who's worked with E.J. Manuel. Pretty straightforward stuff about jumping rope to get E.J.'s footwork better, about watching it gives you stuff to watch when you watch practice. See how that's going to my untrained eye. Our thanks to Steve Calhoun, armedanddangerousfootball.com. That's his website. And he has worked extensively, as you can tell, with Bills quarterback E.J. Manuel. Hey, if you're interested in the draft, which I think you are, make sure you follow along on BuffaloBills.com. Our draft previews continue. Cornerback Jason Verrett from Texas Christian is the latest prospect who's up there, a video piece that I did. Chris Brown will have another one tomorrow, and we move on right up until 2 weeks away from the draft. Bills had a couple of players in for visits today, including one of the top linebackers, C.J. Mosley, was in today for a visit. C.J. Mosley, who ran well at the combine and ran even better at his pro day. C.J. Mosley, 6'2", 234 pounds, one of the top, maybe the top inside linebacker prospect in the draft from Alabama. And a running back from Towson, Terrence West, 5'9", 209-pounder, was also in for a visit today. Those visits, I would think, are going to be winding down very shortly. More about the draft tomorrow, the Bills media draft day. We'll hear from Calvin Fisher, we'll hear from Jim Monos and Doug Whaley on the show tomorrow night, so make sure you stick around for that. We're on the air tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Pete Karchus, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills' director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.